Hot Seats and Cold Brews. Dein Mountainbike-Podcast mit Insights, Trash and Talk direkt aus der Szene.
Hello and welcome back to Hot Seats and Cold Brews. This time in English, so everybody who hasn't had any time to practice their English for all the German listeners in the past years, now you really got to listen carefully because I have a guest today who is one of my favorite people in the world. And I've probably never been so excited to record a podcast because, yeah, my guest is a very, very good friend of mine and a person that I haven't talked to in a long time. So we have a lot to catch up on. She is not only one of the best friends, but also one of the best female freeride mountain bikers in the world. She comes from BC, Canada, and learned biking in the famous North Shore. She loves to ride steep lines, and she has been racing also in the Downhill World Cup. That's actually where we met first, and collected national titles and podiums and so on. She's an extremely talented artist and also lately got into tattooing. Maybe she will tell us more about it soon. She loves all kinds of outdoors adventures and also just restorated, I hope this is the right word, a sailboat with her dad, but struggles to change a tubeless tire here and there. We have had some really unforgettable times together in France, Austria, Switzerland, Portugal, New Zealand, Eastern Canada, Whistler, and even more countries that I forgot about already because it's a long time we know each other. And she even came to visit me in Germany 2 years ago. And we almost got really famous as the two stork girls on YouTube, but then COVID happened and we had no time to edit all the footage we got. So yeah, she's definitely one of the most talented people and one of the most humble people I know. Welcome, Michaela Gatto.
Thank you. Wow, what an intro. What an intro. You only got one thing wrong.
Okay,
what was it? The tubeless tire in New Zealand. That was your tire, not mine. But we both failed. We both epically failed at trying to pump that up with a tube or with a bike pump with like 5 minutes before we had to leave.
I just remember that everything technical.
Horrible. Yeah. No.
But then the sailboat thing, you know, I was like, wow, she does all this stuff, but your bike is a mess most of the time.
Yeah. I can't explain it. I think the sailboat thing, because it's new, I'm like super interested in it. And it's with my dad and he's helping like show me everything. And with a bike, I'm like, I've been doing it for like 20 plus years. And I'm like, I don't know. There's always
somebody around who can help you.
Yeah, I think I was spoiled growing up because I had mechanics racing World Cups and stuff fixing my bikes for me. So I never really took the time, or I had amazing friends like you who were way more into the technical stuff and the mechanical stuff than me. So yeah,
I'm actually not that good, but compared to you, I was always the one who had maybe some more tools in the back.
Yeah, the blind leading the blind. No, you were prepared though. I was didn't even bring water.
But yeah, that's why we are such a good match. But we haven't seen each other for a while, and a lot happened in the past 2 years. But before we come to that, everything I said was right.
Yes,
I hope. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Because normally I do all the Google searching and make notes, but this time I was just writing down everything that comes to my mind. There were more things, but it was a long intro anyway.
Like Oktoberfest and stuff.
Oh, Oktoberfest. Yes. That's actually, we didn't really get into doing this YouTube channel. But I think it's still live, so if anybody's interested in the two stock girls.
Oh, yeah, it's still on the internet. Oh, man. There's a few things on the internet that we've done.
The internet doesn't forget. The two stock girls Oktoberfest edit is still something I watch here and there. Like once a year, I have to watch it, and it's so fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I did really forget something very important. That is your Deep Summer For the Girls video. Yeah. Anybody who doesn't know Michaela or doesn't know For the Girls, please watch it.
Yes.
I don't know if we can make show notes. If not, it's written FERDA girls.
The girls. FERDA girls.
The girls.
Yeah, that was also really fun. You were also in that video.
Yeah.
We've done a lot. We've done a lot over the last few decade or so.
Yeah, but not in the past 2 years. I hope you miss me a lot.
I do. I think about you all the time, and I still know that I haven't edited that article.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. That article. I thought about it. I have an article we did when you were here 1.5 years ago, and we did a story in Berlin.
Yeah.
And I promised a common sponsor of us, Schwalbe, I put it on a German website, but I said we would also put it on Pink Bike. But then the text in English just got stuck.
You know what I tell myself? I'm like, man, because when you were having Ken, your first kid, you were like, yeah, we were thinking maybe if it was a girl, we'd name her Michaela. And then you had a girl and you didn't name her Michaela. And I'm like, I bet it's because I didn't edit that Pink Bike article.
Yeah, you're right.
You're like, no. I'm not going to name my daughter after someone who can't hit a deadline.
Yeah, no, it's not because of
that's
that.
That's fine. It's
actually,
fine.
In my heart, she's called Michaela. She's actually called Ava Michaela Mart. No.
Ava Michaela. That's unfortunate, I think. But no, it's okay. No offense taken. I'm a year and a half late. Probably I'm never going to edit that, so...
Yeah, but it's an article we made in spring, so you got a couple of months until next spring, and then it really has to go go on Pink Bike then. It didn't get that out. Actually, we did it with Timo Pritze. Lots of listeners will know Timo for sure, because he is an iconic German mountain biker and BMXer, and we actually have a yoga session with him next week. It's our Christmas party, and he comes and does the biking yoga with us.
Cool. Yeah. So, yeah, that project was awesome. It was such a whirlwind. We only had a couple days, but I had no idea Berlin had a trail system, and it's already known internationally as being this super funky, super cool, artsy city with so much history. And then to have it have all these mountain bike spots, I was like, whoa, this is insane. This is so cool. I was shocked. I was like, oh yeah, we're doing, I pictured okay, we're going to go ride in Berlin because Berlin's such a cool city. And that's the highlight. And then the riding is sort of the low light, because as you know, traveling around the world, there's a lot of spots that are super cool spots, but the actual trails are not so good. But Berlin legit had some sweet little trails. Even if it was just a small hill, it was sick. I was like, oh, we're on dirt. We're in the woods. We're going around berms. We're going off of jumps. This is crazy.
Yeah. And I remember I had to go home a bit earlier before your flight home. And Timo also took you to a tattoo shop, didn't he?
Didn't he? No, we didn't going. No.
Oh.
No,
I thought
we were supposed to, but...
Because it's quite a long time now you are into it.
Yeah, and now, I have,
Oh, wow! Michaela shows me her arm, and it's pretty full.
Yeah, it's, full sleeve, and then I have, I got a merman on this side.
Oh, wow, yeah. It looks really cool. So maybe next time we see each other, I have to get my first tattoo.
Yeah. So I've been tattooing I apprenticed the last two or so years, and then tattooing out of a shop in Squamish now. My apprenticeship was in San Diego, but with Outdoor Traditions. And then now I'm in Squamish, BC, Canada, and I'm tattooing out of there whenever I can. In June, I was tattooing 3 days a week, and then everything just fell apart because it's summer. And then I'm hoping January I'm going to start at the shop again.
Yeah, that sounds cool. It's definitely, for me, when I heard you would start doing this, I thought, yeah, it's cool because you're an artist as well as a mountain biker. And tattooing for me brings both together a bit because I see so many tattoos in mountain biking, and it's also kind of an expression of, I don't know, your passions and
It's cool. It's like because tattooing, you like deal with people, and like it's such a physical art form. I think it translates well, and like you said, so many mountain bikers are covered in tattoos. It's kind of that like rebellious attitude or that risk taking and that adrenaline stuff. It kind of all goes hand in hand with like getting tattooed, hitting big jumps. Like,
that's why I don't have any tattoos. I'm just a damn pussy.
maybe
one day it would be cool. And I also want to come back to Squamish. We actually met in Squamish one of the first times ever. I don't know which year it was, but Squamish, for everybody who doesn't know it, because Germans, or everybody, I think, every mountain biker knows Whistler for their for the bike park and A-Line, and like, Whistler is kind of where everybody wants to go to. But for me personally, Squamish, which is in between Vancouver and Whistler, is actually the place to be.
I love Whistler for the, like, Whistler's like Hollywood, kind of. Like, you see a bunch of people, like, famous riders and all this stuff, like, pretty often. And then the bike park is so accessible. And then everything is walking distance, the village, the shops. It's, something's always happening. Someone is always partying. Like, there's always an event. It's pretty fast-paced. But for me, Squamish, it's like 45 minutes south of Whistler, and it's all the big rock slabs and trail riding. There's no bike park, but there's shuttling and there's pedaling, and I think some of the best trails in the world, and the people are a little more like, it's less touristy, so it's a lot chiller and no lineups, and there's so many trails and everything's green and mossy and beautiful, and
you can definitely rainy. Get lost in those woods. The trail, there are some really, really gnarly lines, but also stuff that is just so flowy and so picturesque, like you really feel like in, I don't know, in a movie. I was there for 2 months, and we rode every day. It was actually February, so it is. You can also go there in winter. We went, skiing to Whistler and just riding in Squamish every day. And I didn't have many trails that I rode twice because there was so much stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is like the more I travel, the more I appreciate home and like where I grew up on the North Shore and Squamish and Whistler, like between Pemberton, Whistler, Squamish, and the North Shore, you can ride your whole life, I think, and be satisfied. There's just, I mean, I'm biased, but Kamloops is four hours away, and Kamloops is like dry desert riding, so it's like you get everything.
I've been riding in BC a bunch, and it is, I mean, compared to trails in Europe or mountain bike destinations, it's just, there's no comparison. It's so wild, like we always have fun when you were here and we were riding these old walking paths.
Oh my god, like gravel switchbacks. I'm like, oh man, I'm like, where are we going?
but that's kind of normal here. I mean, I quite like it, these really gnarly, like, you, it's almost, it's hiking paths. I mean, it's almost not rideable.
I know. Go, like, I kind of like it too, though. I do like the super techie jank, as we call it.
I mean, you have those kind of trails too, but I think that's the whole difference. We have this really long history of hikers building paths in the Alps or in the hillside mountains, whatever. And you just have trails that are made for mountain biking, which makes a whole lot of a difference.
That's true. That is true. I will say, though, on all of my travels, there's always Germans wherever I go in the world. And they always shred. Like, the Germans are good mountain bikers. Like, when you have, like if I'm hosting a camp in Mexico or something, and there's, like, a couple Americans, whatever, South Americans, German... The German guy or girl is always sendy and always just like, we're going to go and we're going to ride all day. And they're like super technically sound. And like, they're always like, just really good riders. And maybe that's because they're just riding hiking trails all the time. So everything's easy compared to some of the trails in Germany, I think.
Ah, that's interesting. The Germans will love to hear that. I have to write this down. This is the title of the podcast. The Germans are everywhere. The Germans are everywhere. Yeah, that's what we say about, I don't know. There's also a country we say this about. I think it's the Dutch. We always say the Dutch are everywhere. Anyways, yeah, there are a lot of Germans and they love to travel. So you've probably traveled more than me in the past years, for sure. And yeah, this question is always hard, but I think it's super interesting. What would you say? What were the top three places to go to?
For
biking and just the whole package. You know, it's not only biking. There's so much more to it. There's like the vibe, the people, the food, the country itself. Like, what would you say? Where is the place to go?
I think Oaxaca for sure. Like Oaxaca Bike Expeditions, I've been hosting some trips with them for the last few years. And because I'm an artist, Oaxaca City is so freaking cool. Like if you like art and you like rugs and you like insane food and really cool culture, and they have a parade like every day. I don't even know. Like there's always people in the streets, like with these huge paper mache heads and stuff. And you're like, I have no idea what's going on, but I love it. Oaxaca is incredible. And
where is it?
It's a city in Mexico.
Oh, Oaxaca. Okay.
Yeah. So it's south. It's on mainland Mexico. It's not Baja. And it's south of Mexico City quite a bit. And a few, it's inland a couple hours, but if you drive a few hours west, I believe, you get to the ocean and there's surfing. So I think this year we're going to try and do some mountain biking surfing and see how that works. And then maybe rumors of having like a mountain bike surf camp.
Oh, yeah. We tried to do this in Portugal?
Yeah. With Aline, right?
Oh yeah, in Portugal.
Yeah.
So actually Arisera was also that bit of artsy and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Compare Portugal to Mexico, just because people in Germany, they know Portugal, maybe.
It's so different. But I love both of them. Portugal was gonna be the next thing I mentioned. Like Sintra, Arisera, Lusa, like that whole, like our trips to Portugal. I think about Portugal all the time. I went back last year for a surf trip. The surf was not good though. We were not in a good time of year, or like, I don't know. It was between wind. There was just like no waves anywhere. And that happens with surfing. But my second favorite place would be Portugal, I would say. Just because of the surfing and the biking and stuff. And the food and the people, like same thing. I would say it has less of an artsy vibe, like a little bit. It feels a little more modern and like cool surfer town vibe than Oaxaca. Oaxaca is like more traditional cultural. Whereas I think Arisera is more like modern, like cool granola surfer people. Which I also love, and there is a lot of art, but it feels like more modern, whereas Oaxaca feels old. And then with Oaxaca, the tours, it's 6 days and it's all shuttling, so you don't have to climb anywhere. You just get driven to the top and you get to ride down, which is also a huge plus because I don't really like biking uphill. But the same with Portugal. Yeah. Like
that in Portugal too, no?
With the Wii Ride, it's all shuttle. And yeah, it's super cool. Like I'm sensing a theme because my third one was New Zealand.
Yeah, you always have this, you like this, like ocean surfing.
Ocean, biking, warm weather, nice food.
Yeah, but I mean, won't blame you for that.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel like everyone kind of likes that. But yeah, New Zealand is like classic. Everybody knows about New Zealand for mountain biking and Queenstown and everything. But like, maybe an unpopular opinion, maybe it's because I just haven't been to Queenstown enough, but I really like it. But I really like the North Island of New Zealand because it's way more tropical. And I think I like it like Rotorua because one of my other best friends from another country, Ash, lives out there, and her husband and their two kids. And there's just so much pedaling and riding. Like, I know I said I don't like pedaling, but the Rotorua pedaling is like, it just feels easy and chill.
Yeah,
and there's also like, we did a project out there, and it's also just like, just the people again, and like the coffee shops are so good. And then you have Mount Maunganui, and like, it's got really fun little hike, and it's got surfing as well. So it's all just like,
yeah,
the trails are sick. Yeah. For me, I think a requirement for bike trips is like, trails have to be sick, number one, food has to be good, number two, and there has to be like some element of like fun and relaxing. And that usually for me means like good weather and ocean.
Sounds good. Yeah, I just when you mentioned the riding and Rotorua and stuff, I just remember how we got lost on a photo shoot. Man. It gets dark so quickly in New Zealand.
we got lost
like in the sunset, and it was super nice. Sun went down, and we were on top of the mountain, and we were like, okay, the sun is gone.
What we're like, I think we just take this road down. And like, for me, like in BC, a lot like the fire roads will just go down to the bottom, but this fire road went like out into someone's like farm or something. Remember the cows?
Yeah, we went down, and it was pitch black, and then there was just a horde of like something,
a wild boar or something. I don't know. It was so loud. Came, and like, oh my god!
Yeah, it was just getting louder and I was like, "What kind of animals is it?" And it gets closer and closer. Oh my god!
Yeah, they're like stampeding, but then I think there was a fence because they like it sounded like they were gonna stampede on top of us, and then they turned, and then they like we could hear them going away, but it was. That was like an actual scary moment where we were
I was super scared. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it took us like 1 or 2 hours to get to a road after that. And it was like super, super dark, and we had nothing with us. Classic.
Classic.
Yeah. Cool. So let's get back a bit to the Mountain Bike World Cup. I mean, that changed a lot, I guess. Do you follow it a bit, or is it like totally out of your...
I honestly don't really. Like, I know, like, I care about like the local guys, like Jackson Goldstone and Gracie and like Canadian racers. I kind of like hear through social media, and I follow them and stuff, like how they're doing. But as far as like how a World Cup is set up with like, how much practice time you have, when's qualifying, how many people qualify, the race, like the structure of it, I don't really pay attention, and I don't really like follow it because I think because I kind of had it like I got a really bad head injury in 2014 and had to quit racing World Cups. It was really bitter for me for a long time. Like, I didn't want to stop racing, but I was kind of forced to stop because of my head. And so I didn't really want to like watch any of it because watching it was like painful for me. Like, it was really sad, and I wished I was there. And then I got over it because I discovered freeride and content creation and all this stuff, which I like better than racing. But I think I just got out of the habit of paying attention to it because I'm kind of like, I would rather be doing it than just watching it.
Do you think you could still do it?
No.
I don't know. It's just a question.
I mean, never say never. But, like, I haven't trained like that. Like, I think back to when I was racing World Cups. I was in the gym 6 days a week. I was, like, super fit and riding all the time. And, you know, I was still, like, top 10. And I know the level has increased so much since then. That's 2014. Yeah. It's like 11 years ago, and I haven't trained like that since, and I haven't, you know, like I haven't trained for racing in over a decade. So it's like, yeah, maybe I could ride down the course, but like, I don't
know,
man.
It looks pretty crazy what they do now.
Yeah,
I mean,
and like the speed and the jumps and everything, I'm kind of like, man, I used to do that? Like, that's nuts. Like, I watch it now and I'm like, kind of unbelievable that I was in that loop, you know, because it feels like a different life at this point.
But it's pretty, I mean, I always look back and I'm just proud of it, you know, like, I mean, totally. It has been a different time and maybe, I don't know, maybe the speed was a bit slower or the jumps were a bit smaller, but for that
time. The bikes
time,
were a bit sketchier.
Yeah, but yeah, we still did it and we did well and it was just cool to be part of it. But yeah. Then, I mean, what you can maybe, say when we talk about progression and how things got a bit faster and bigger and whatever, the free ride, the women's free ride movement, that's what I just always look at and I'm like, wow, this, I mean, that gets pretty insane. I wouldn't have, honestly, like 10 years ago, I wouldn't have thought that this is going to happen, that women do what they do today.
It's awesome. Like, I think we were pushing for so long to have this be a reality. And I think, like, for me, Katie Holden was one of the first women I ever saw to break out of the racing scene and focus more on, like, free ride and adventure and storytelling. And she really inspired me. And then, honestly, I feel like me and you kind of were, like, at the beginning of all of that as well with, like, content creation and stuff. I mean, it was 2015, I guess, when we started trying to like make a living riding bikes without racing. And I think a lot of the girls were still racing, doing a bit of free ride on the side, but still getting most of their income and everything from racing. So it was like, for women, making money outside of racing, making money in racing was barely attainable. Making money outside of racing was like out of the question. So yeah. You think about that, and then you think about where we're at today and how women have slopestyle and free ride events, Red Bull Rampage, FMB World Tour, like everything includes women now, is pretty impressive. And it's, and I think, I hate doing this, but I've had like multiple people, like the Groms, they're like, well, it's because of you and Casey and Vero and like, we're all of the women, like collectively, we were all part of this push, and because of all of us as a whole who like never gave up and had these ideas and like, yeah, we want to like make a story, we want to travel here, like give us money, and like putting ourselves out there and like really pushing for to be seen and to be heard. And like, I think it's, yeah, like the younger generation has taken that and then they build on it, and it just snowballs. And then it like grows exponentially because now there's more girls riding. Now there's more girls getting money and more girls competing. And yeah, it's awesome. It's so cool. It's amazing. I'm so happy to see it.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, I've never been to one of these, like, I don't know, Fest series or Formation or the slope style and these events that women do today. So I've never seen it in person, but I can only imagine it's pretty,
badass.
It's pretty badass, for
pretty
sure.
Pretty badass. I don't know if we're allowed to say that, but.
I mean, is it that I was wondering because it always seems to me that racing is a bit like one against the other. And you're kind of doing it together and, it's a family and everybody's nice to each other and stuff, but at the end of the day you still try to win. How is it with the women? Because I can only imagine, I mean, women, they are men as well, but I just guess it's like a family and they're like trying to show each other the line and hey, I push you over this jump, or you know what I mean? Is it more that vibe, or is it also like everybody tries to be
the best?
And I mean, how is the vibe?
I think it's a bit of both. I haven't really been to the slope style. Like, I haven't been on course for like joyride slope style. I think in those moments, it's pretty serious and everyone's just trying to do their best. So it's like, there's talking and it's, you know, we are all friends outside of competition. So there is friendliness, but I think there's a lot more focus involved with the tricks and everything. But as far as like the free ride scene goes, because that's more what I can talk to, like Formation and Red Bull Rampage and stuff like that, it's like we're all like we all have our kind of like natural like best friends. Like for me, like Georgia Astle, Casey Brown, and like Andrianne was there this year, like the Canadian free ride girls, and we kind of stick together just because we spend the most time together. But then there's like Cammy and Hannah Bergman and all those girls, and we all get along and we all really like each other. Like, I don't think anyone really has like beef or like hatred for anybody, you know? Like, there's always little things, like, and there's more, there's people that are like attracted to each other more, just personality. It's like normal. The guys are the same. Honestly, the guys I feel like throw more temper tantrums than the girls. Like,
yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, like the guys can like, I've seen like guys get in almost fist fights at Rampage over their lines. Really? Whereas like the girls are kind of more like it's different. Like we deal with problem solving differently than the men, and it's interesting to see the way we work together versus the men, how we support each other, because we are separated. We're on different like sides of the mountains.
That's what I wanted to know. Yeah. So it's not the same site.
No, it's not the same site. It is like an old men's site. So this last year, well, year before, the first year women were in Rampage, 2024, it was a, I believe it was a completely new site. Or it was a super, super old one, but it was not like there was not much there. I think it was a completely new site.
Yeah.
It was super small, though, like short. It was really hard to fit everyone's lines in the space that was given. And even though there was only 8 women, like everyone's lines all converged just the way the land was. There was a main ridge line. And when we first saw the map, because I was an alternate that year, so I got a bit more information. When we first saw the map, it looked like there was 3 ridge lines that kind of all converged near the bottom, which is usually what happens. You have a starting point that is all the same, and you can either go straight or to the left or to the right, and then you kind of choose your own adventure, and then you come back together at the bottom for like, there's like a few big trick jumps and stuff that kind of everyone builds and everyone shares. But this site, it was like, you start at the top, and no matter which way you went, you all converged at the exact same spot on the middle ridge. Yeah. And they called it Spaghetti Junction, because it was like 8 lines were like all crossing each other. And I know that caused a lot of like friction between some riders, because everyone wants to have their jump or their feature that suits their riding the best, but there just was like no room. And then it kind of separated again, and then it went together at the bottom. So it was like kind of a weird one, but everyone sorted it out and everyone had good lines. And then this year was a 2015 site, and like Chelsea did, the girls stepped it up so much this year. Like, it was a site that I dug at and rode at for Formation a few years ago, 2019. Okay, so 2019, I was the only girl who would even go to the top of the site and ride that like knife edge ridge.
I
dropped in through the middle, and everyone thought I was psycho, and none of the girls wanted anything to do with it. Me and Hannah Bergman were the only 2 girls had a line kind of down the middle, which is where a few girls' lines were this year. And then the rest all went on this, like, they called it the party ridge. And it was like pretty tame respect of like how it was. Fast forward to this year. I mean, even Formation after that, like everyone is starting at the top. Everyone is throwing down insane lines. And then this year, Chelsea Kimball did the Battleship that we all thought Brendan Faircloth was insane for doing last year. And she did it this year. And it's like, I didn't like, and then my double drop down the middle line, which Hannah Bergman also hit. Cammy, Chelsea, Georgia, I think that's it. They did what Tyler McCall did in 2015, and instead of doing a double drop, they just dropped the whole thing.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They just gapped the whole thing, and it was called El Presidente, and it was like 70 feet or something, or 50 feet. I don't know. It was huge. I was like, oh my God. I was blown away. Like, even the progression from last year's Rampage to this year's Rampage. But more so, like, when I was at Formation, it was 2019. It's 2025. That's 6 years. And they're going from being too scared to be at the top to, like, sending the exact same lines that the guys were sending in 2015. It's like, and last year, like, hitting the Battleship is nuts. Yeah. So, yeah, super impressive.
But how do they, I mean, because I was always thinking, what holds women back from doing it is that they are physically not as capable as men. But then you see, but then you see snowboarding or skiing and they just hit the same size jumps and do almost the same tricks. I was like, yeah, I don't know what it is with mountain biking. But then now, I'm just so a bit ill. Now I feel it's just that they have this vibe together and they just try to do this together. And if one does something, then everybody else is like, yeah, okay, we can do it and just push each other. And it's so cool to see. And I mean, what do you think? Where does it go from here? Like, what, I mean, they can't really progress that much again, or can they?
I mean, yeah, the women for sure, like, back to what you were saying about like physiological things, it's like I don't think that it's physical at all. Like, you see some of those free ride guys, they've never been to the gym a day in their life. They're 5'7" and 145 pounds. Like, you can't tell me that it's physically more advanced. Like, I know I'm stronger, taller, all this stuff. So it's like, it's not physical. I think it's mental. And I think a lot of it has to do with, like, if you give someone an opportunity, they're going to take it. And women were just never given this opportunity. And you see, in the last 5 years, we've been given this opportunity. In 5 years, we've grown so exponentially to the point of some of the girls hitting the guys' lines. It's just proof that, like, with opportunity comes progression, and also with community comes progression. And I think that if she can do it, I can do it, is so incredibly powerful. And it's not just like amongst friends pushing friends, it's showing girls at home, like little girls at home, what they can look up to and what is possible for women. Whereas for us, we didn't have that. We didn't have anyone to look up to. It had never been done before. So we're like, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was starting mountain biking in 2001, I looked up to surfers, like surfing girls, because they were cool and they were feminine and they were badass. But there was like, I didn't really know. There was a couple women, but it's like you really didn't have a clear picture. Like, women weren't really in magazines. You didn't really have posters of women doing big drops and stuff. Like, it didn't exist. So it's like, I don't know. I think you're just looking at the last 6 years, it's like now that we know that it exists, there's nothing stopping us.
It's really, really cool to see, and I'm just so proud of them. And what you were saying, I mean, I don't know if I could call myself some of the first movers. I don't know, I've done this, like,
I think so,
gaps in Utah and stuff. But what they do now, I would just, no, I wouldn't. I couldn't. It's crazy. It's
that road gap you did in Utah back in friggin', I don't even know, 2012 or something. Like, that was
14, 15. Yeah.
14. That was the beginning of it. And like Katrina Strand and like some other girls on the shore, like, unfortunately, their stuff didn't get documented as much. So they weren't seen as much. But it's like, we've been pushing, and it's all part of this like snowball effect that's happening.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's really cool. Now it's just there's enough girls doing it everywhere that the progression is like ramping up. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
And I mean, you have been there a lot of times. I don't know. Did you go almost every year to Rampage, didn't you? Sometimes to dig, sometimes to shoot. No, I thought.
No. I was at Formation. So I was at the Women's Rampage before it was Women's Rampage. 2019, 2020, I missed, or there wasn't one. And then I missed one. And then I did another one as like a shooter. And then I been to Rampage twice.
Okay, but I mean, yeah, you have been there as well. Maybe just for people who are listening who can't really imagine the size. I mean, I always think that it looks pretty gnarly on TV or Red Bull TV, whatever, on the screen.
Nothing compares to real life.
Yeah, it's like, it's pretty scary to even walk up there.
The thing, I'm not telling people to go and do this, but if you stand on top of a 3 or 4 story building, I'm just looking outside, I'm like, there's a 3-story building across the street. If you stand on the top of that, on the edge, and look down at the sidewalk, and that feeling you get of like, oh God, like kind of like a sick feeling in your stomach, or like, ooh, I'm kind of up high, I need to be careful. That's like one of the smaller step downs that the dudes do. Like, that's what it feels like walking around out there. You feel like you. Some of the stuff they do, I like. If I want to throw up, like it's so messed up. It's messed up what they do. Like it's massive. It's and then they front flip off it. I'm like, guys. Stress me out.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the point. That's what I said on this podcast as well. Last time I talked to Toby, we talked about Rampage, and I said I had this feeling every time I was there, which was not really, I don't know, not very enjoyable, because there's this feeling in the air. I don't know if you have the same, that something bad is gonna happen to someone. It's just like so scary that you're almost like you don't want to watch. Because, I don't know, something cool stuff has happened, can happen, which mostly does. It's more like I'm afraid to watch because I'm afraid that somebody is going to get hurt, which, I mean, did happen.
Well, I mean, Adolf this year, watching his run, there definitely was, when he went for the second backflip, we all were just like, oh, no. Because, like, I think we knew he was too far. He didn't have time to do another one. And like him and Emil and Simon Godziak, like they all had really big crashes, and it all just like is so sobering. And like the, like Adolf's crash, I've never heard an event go completely silent. Like it was completely silent until like no one really said much until the helicopter was like gone with him. And we were all just like in shock, and it was super traumatic. And I'm so glad that he's okay. He is paralyzed from the chest down. Not sure on the recovery for him. Like, I don't know a lot of details. He actually does a really good job documenting it on his social media. And if you want to donate, Ride to Recovery has a donation for him. But yeah, there's really, really heavy moments. And in those moments, you hear the guys and the girls, and kind of all of us are kind of like, what's the point in this? Like, why are we doing this? Like, this is not worth it. Like, having someone get this injured, like, why are we, like, is this even something we should be doing? And like, there's a lot of questions that come up, and a lot of emotions, and a lot of fear and grief and all this stuff. And as far as like the future of the sport, like, I'm like, I mean, Paul Bass got paralyzed quite a few years ago now, and we asked ourselves the same. And like, we asked ourselves the same thing then, but it just keeps, we just keep progressing. And people are talking about, well, maybe if the judging was different, maybe if this was different and that was different. And I agree on some respects, but then also at the end of the day, it's like you can't stop someone from pushing themselves and doing what they want. Like, the guys are in complete control of what they build, how big the jumps they want to hit, what tricks they want to do. It's all up to their own discretion. So how are you supposed to tell someone who is convinced they can do a double backflip off a 60-foot step down? What, you're going to tell him no? And also, like, if he was successful, it would have been one of the coolest things in mountain bike history.
Yeah.
So it's like this fine line, and you just hope that all the riders, men and women, can judge their own risk and judge their own abilities and speed and transitions correctly so that they're as successful as possible. But it is an extreme sport, and accidents are going to happen. And as much as it is part of the sport, it doesn't make it any less traumatic or horrible. But it is the reality. So it's like this weird, I don't know.
Yeah. It's hard. It's like, it's really hard. And everybody has their opinion about it, or maybe don't. Like, it's just hard to put yourself on the one side or the other. But I was just really, I have mixed feelings about Rampage. I think it's like super great to see the progression and the riders and what they do. And also, I don't know, you know, you go to, I don't know, I remember a couple of years ago, I went to like a McDonald's or something, and they had like Rampage on the screen. And I was like, wow, like everybody in like, not even the mountain bike side. Also, they see this and it's cool and it's my sport, you know, like, I'm not riding Rampage, but it's mountain biking, and it's a cool way of seeing mountain biking, because mountain biking, I mean, to be honest, I think in some ways it also looks really uncool. I mean, you know, like, covered in protection. And, you know, like, super, somebody told me this thing before, when you go to a bike park in Europe, everybody walks around like a bag of Skittles or something, you know, because it's so colorful.
Yeah, it's true. It's funny, the subcultures in each sport. But I think, like Rampage can be compared to like big wave surfing. So there's like so much types of surfing, and for the everyday person, they're never going to do Jaws or Pipe or hit Mavericks or go to Portugal and surf the monster 100-foot waves and stuff. But I think there is also always going to be boundary pushers. There's always going to be the guy or the girl looking for the biggest wave, the biggest trick, the biggest jump. And like, it's human nature. And I think, like, as devastating as it can be sometimes, like in skiing and snowboarding with avalanches, like pushing out in the mountains, it's like, it's kind of like, that's what makes the sport.
Yeah.
The sport, and it's up to you. Like, you always have a choice, and some people are willing to risk more than others, and you just kind of, as long as they're not doing something stupid, because I don't think what Adolf did was stupid. He'd done double black backflips tons of times before. He's practiced it, he thought about it, he calculated it, and just sometimes stuff goes wrong. But as long as you're not some guy that just bought your first mountain bike and are like, I'm going to do a double backflip because I saw it on TV. It's like, don't be an idiot. But also, like, accidents happen. And it's part of the sport. And every sport has the limit pushers.
The comparison to big wave surfing, I liked a lot, because that's also, I watch it and I'm also always like, oh my God, it's like,
yeah, it's nuts. It's like, what are you doing? No. Why? Yeah. But like, we all search for that thrill, and we all want that feeling, and some people want it more than others. And some people like are so progressed in the sport that like, to get that feeling of adrenaline, you got to do some pretty heinous stuff.
I know. I get the adrenaline if I just do a small jump nowadays.
Yeah. For me with surfing, I'm like, I get like a shoulder high wave and I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, trying new sports or like the sports that you are not used to every day or like as a profession, which mountain biking is for us, it's always fun. I'm actually into handball now. So
yeah?
That gives me the thrill. Maybe it's not a thing in Canada.
What is that?
Handball?
Like juggling?
Yeah, sort of. Juggling. Yeah. I'm also juggling my crazy lifestyle
children.
Right now.
Yeah.
Whose idea was that? Anyway.
Oh, man. Don't say that. I want to have kids one day.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Me.
Just save your energy for that.
Oh, no.
Could you, just one question I'm interested about, because I thought about it for myself now as I have a bit of a limited time and it's hard doing mountain biking as a job. I don't know how long or how I will manage to do it. I hope I can, because I asked myself the question and maybe you can answer it as well. Could you even imagine a life without mountain biking, or let's say a work life? I mean, we still have to earn some money to pay the bills. So a life without the lifestyle of a mountain. I mean, I don't know if you call yourself a pro mountain biker. I think.
Yeah.
You do. I do. There's other things we earn money with, but I would say I'm a pro mountain biker and I don't think I can ever change it in my life.
It's a good question. Because, you know, most people think like mountain biking has an expiry date of like making a living at it. But I think it's cool seeing like Brett Tippy and like people that are getting older who are still shredding and still like Brett Tippy's in his 50s and he's still making it a living. So it gives me hope. Also like Rachel Strait and you, and it's like women who have kids, Rachel Atherton, and they're still making it a living. I do call myself a professional mountain biker because my income comes from mountain biking. Like the tattooing is like on the side. If everything was taken away tomorrow, I would not be able to sustain myself without mountain biking. But more than anything, it's just like, it's what brings me joy. Like nothing feels as natural and makes me as happy as riding my bike. And when I go long periods of time without riding, which seems to be more and more often now, just because as you are an adult, it's more about emails and content and traveling and stuff than it is about like actually just going out and riding with your friends, which is, I'm trying to make a New Year's resolution to ride my bike every day. But when I go without it, I'm like not the same person. I'm like a shittier human.
Yeah.
So I think for like everyone's sake, for my boyfriend, for my future children, for my family, like it's better if I stay on the bike.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
But for what, like we don't need to get into the nuances of it, but like, I was making, and you as well, we were making our living on like adventure riding and storytelling and documenting our adventures. And for me, the hardest thing lately is it feels like the mountain bike industry as a whole is in a very volatile state. There's bike companies going under. It feels like every other day. That it seems like no one has money for media, or if they do, they just want TikToks or like 15-second reels where you show off a piece of the bike and there's like no substance to it. And so for me, I'm trying to figure out like, how do we get back to quality over quantity? Like social media has been amazing, but I feel like it's also ruined the quality of the content that we consume and we create. And for me, that is making a TikTok or a reel does not bring me joy. Like what brings me joy is riding my bike in a way that tells a story that inspires others to make positive changes in their life or to bring people confidence or motivation to do things that are going to make their lives better. Like, it's like, I want to make an impact. I don't want to sell something. And if I'm going to sell something, I want to sell a lifestyle. And I want to make people feel good about themselves. And it feels like nobody cares about that anymore. And
I know what you're really saying, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really hard to get money. Like, it's really hard. Like, hey, I have this amazing idea with this 5-minute video. And they're like, cool.
Yeah, it's just yeah, not, that's have money the thing. For that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's...
It's like, yeah, okay, it's... well, I don't know how to film it myself. And my filmer isn't going to just do this for free. Like, and it's not even doing it for free. It's going to cost them thousands of dollars because of the time and the energy and the equipment and the travel that it takes to make these things. So it's like, I feel stuck. Like, I definitely feel stuck because there's so much I want to do, but it seems like the support for whatever reason is not there.
Yeah, I know, like, what you're saying. It's so difficult. I hope it changes again. I'm thinking, yeah, like, it's so, everything is so digital now that every day I'm telling myself, like, it makes me sick. Like, looking on the phone the whole day, I'm like, no, I don't want to have an app for my freaking, I don't know, washing machine.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, everything, I know.
Everything is so digital. So maybe we get back to more, I don't know, yeah, more quality. And maybe we bring back the Two Store Girls YouTube channel.
Yeah.
If somebody's listening with a lot of money.
I still want to do a couple of those projects that we were trying to pitch. You know the ones.
I know. We had a lot of ideas and it was fun. Like, it's hard to find, you know, like, just to have this connection with somebody. And every time we met, I mean, I don't know, we were laughing so hard. It was so much fun. And I feel like we also just, it was fun for us, but also we infected a lot of other people. I had the feeling that wherever we came, it was like, hey.
Yeah, well, a couple of idiots coming down the line. It's like, you can't not laugh at us, you know, like, we're ridiculous.
Yeah, it was so much fun. But
well,
yeah,
it's not the end. We're still alive. We still have, I've seen some, like, on Instagram, these, like, grannies who are, like, fashion grannies. I'm like, hell yeah, that's going to be us with mountain biking. Like, our kids are going to be grown up and gone. And then we're going to be, like, Two Stoked Girls 2.0 in, like, our 70s. It'll be sick.
I'm pretty sure.
Running gravel bikes.
Yeah. I also follow a grandpa now. He's tasting, what are they called in English? Wait, matcha lattes?
Oh, matcha?
Yeah.
Nice.
He's tasting all of them. He's like over 80, I don't know. And he's commenting on it. He says he tastes matcha lattes as long, for so long until he drinks one that he actually likes. Because he thinks they are not very enjoyable. But it's so That's fun. Cool. It's just like, yeah. And he has, I don't know, like 100,000 followers. So we can do it. We just have to have a stupid idea.
Yeah, exactly. I think we have a
anyway. So let's have one final question, a fun one, that I'm really curious about what you're saying. Because I know how much you love where you live, and I can totally understand. If you had to live in Europe, where would you move to?
Portugal.
I mean, actually, this was easy.
Oh no! Wait. Should I say Germany just to make everyone happy?
No, I'm Portugal kidding. Is fine. Portugal's I don't know. Awesome. I mean,
I lived in Sweden for a while.
It's pretty cold there, isn't it?
I do. Yeah, I love Scandinavia for the culture. Again, like, it's just so different, and like Danish design and art, like interior design, they're just. Copenhagen is such a cool city. I love Copenhagen, but I would not live there again. I lived in northern Sweden. That was depressing.
For sure. I can imagine. It's so cold and so dark in the winter.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
But I could live in Portugal. My boyfriend is Italian and French, just like me. So we've been talking about trying to go to Italy and
Italy
France.
Is my favorite country. Italy
yeah.
is just the best. Italy has everything.
And I've never really explored Italy. Like, I've never been to the south of Italy. I've never been to Sicily. I've never been to the those islands you go to. That's not Italy.
No, that's Spain.
Spain.
But yeah, you need to go there too, for sure. Like, we invited.
Southern Europe in and around, and like the Mediterranean and everything. Like, that seems so cool to me. I feel like I've never really explored that area at all.
That's a pretty sick area.
To give a proper answer, I need to come to Europe for like 6 months and hang out with you and go and tour all the nice areas.
Yeah, for sure. I'm about to buy a motorhome, actually, so we can make
amazing.
A road trip. Yeah.
That was sick.
I hope I can do it. It's pretty expensive.
Sail my sailboat over.
Yeah, you can just sail here. I see. Yeah. We wanted to make a sailing story in Portugal as well. Oh, man.
So many ideas.
I had a bit of a break in the past years. But yeah, we will come. We will get back to business one day.
Yeah.
But for now, I'm pretty busy. I'm pretty busy.
Little bit. Well, and then your kids are going to get old enough that you're not as busy, and then that's when I'm going to have kids, and then I'm going to be like, Steffi, how did you do it?
Yeah, we wait a while, and then they can earn the money, and we just live in our vans.
YouTube grannies. I think it's a thing. I think
Two-stoked grannies. Maybe we should save that, like, YouTube channel right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that was a really fun hour. Thanks a lot for talking to me on air.
I ranted a little bit. There was a few times where I was like, she hasn't said a word for like 5 minutes.
No. You are the interview guest. We wanted to hear from you, and now everybody is has more information about Rampage, which was also the goal, because we spread the wrong idea about Women's Rampage being. As being the first time this year, we just totally missed out on 2024.
Well, they did step it up big time this year, and there were 12 girls instead of 8. So you weren't like you were wrong, but you weren't that wrong.
Yeah. All right. Now, thanks a lot, Michaela, and we send you lots of love to Canada.
Yeah.
And
come visit. Thanks for having
me
on the podcast.
See you soon again.
We should do this more often.
Yeah, totally. I mean, people can comment on this and write us messages, more podcasts. Maybe the Two Stalk Girls podcast.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about doing a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be fun.
Yeah, let's have more ideas then.
Yeah, more ideas.
Never come to life.
A lack of ideas. That's
All right. Okay, so thanks a lot. And talk to you soon, hopefully.
Love you as a friend.
Love you as a friend. Bye.
Bye.
Hot Seats and Cold Brews. Dein Mountainbike-Podcast mit Insights, Trash and Talk direkt aus der Szene.